The scripture reading this evening is from Psalms 2, verses 1 through 7. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves, and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, "Let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us." He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrifying them in his fury, saying, "As for me, I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell of the decree. The Lord said to me, 'You are my son. Today I have begotten you.'"
I was able to visit a little while ago with those two of our number that are at HealthSouth, Fred and Glenda, and both of them said, "Tell folks hello. They're thinking about you." And Glenda's in a lot of pain, and really, she's actually doing better than she had been in the hospital, but she doesn't feel like it yet, as far as the way she's suffering, and she really misses you all, and said specifically to say hello from her. But we're hoping that HealthSouth will be good for both of them. If you want to open your Bible with me tonight to 1 Samuel chapter 25, we're going to be looking at an Old Testament story this evening, 1 Samuel 25. That psalm that Mike just read for us, and I appreciate the way he did that and read it so well, that's really one of the most important psalms in the entire book. The second psalm, it is quoted a lot by the New Testament writers, and so parts of that probably sounded familiar to you. It speaks in the second verse of how people, especially powerful people, often set themselves up against God. And then it says, against God's anointed. And that word anointed is key. And it's for our lesson tonight as well. We know that word better as Messiah. It's the word Messiah there. And so people, the psalm says, set themselves against God and against God's Messiah. So that second psalm is a messianic psalm. And it's also a royal psalm. That is a psalm that was perhaps sung or read when a new king came to the throne. You know, all the kings were, in a sense, messiahs because they were anointed when they came to the throne. And especially if the king in question is David, David is God's ideal king in Israel. And we remember that he was anointed. He was so ideal that God's own son, the ultimate Messiah, he would be called the Son of David, as you remember. And so we know that people set themselves against him, that when he was on this earth, people set themselves against Jesus. And they did so much that the early believers, the early Christians, in one of their prayers that's recorded in the book of Acts, by Luke, they quote this psalm, the second psalm, in Acts chapter 4, verses 25 and 26. They're praying, and that prayer is recorded. And it makes the point how in Jesus' day, the powerful people set themselves against God's anointed one. Men like Herod and Pilate, as well as other Gentiles and Jews. And so it was sort of in fulfillment of that psalm. Well, this story of David is, of course, one of the great stories of the Bible. And it's often the story of people setting themselves against God's chosen one, his anointed. And sometimes it's even David who sets himself against himself. We remember the story of Uriah and his wife, and how David really fought against God's purposes for him in that terrible scene from his life. And so God continues to work his will despite all the opposition, and he brings David to the throne of Israel eventually, And he does so again despite all these people who try and put roadblocks in the way and set themselves against what he's trying to do. So remember, if you look down through the beginning part of this chapter, God has chosen David. He's literally anointed him through the hand of Samuel. You might remember that story, how God chose David to be the next king. 1 Samuel chapter 25, verse 1 says that Samuel has now died, and he's been buried. In fact, it says he was buried in his house, which is sort of a strange thing, but sometimes that was done. And Israel has mourned the passing of Samuel, this great man of God. Lots of great stories about Samuel in the Old Testament. David has yet to become king officially. I mean, he's been chosen by God. He's been anointed, but he is not yet on the throne. God has decided he's going to replace Saul. He's going to be next on the throne. But Saul is still trying to prevent that. He is still in hot pursuit of David. David's living out in the wilderness because of it. And he's sort of on the run and wandering around. And he and about 600 fierce warriors sort of roam the wilderness of Israel, and they're fending off Saul and his assassin squads and so forth. It's sort of like the Wild West at this time in Israel. And it seems that that David and his mighty men, as they're wandering around, they're sort of like protectors of people that live on the edge of society, that live out in these wilderness areas, in the wastelands of Israel. And again, just sort of reviewing the first part of this chapter, that they protect people from robbers, from various threats. It even says here that they protect people from wild animals as they roam the country. You can imagine, if that's going on, that endears David and his men to many people. I mean, if there's a group that's out there as your protectors, that is a positive for most people, and that's going to serve David well later. It's going to be a good base of support when he becomes king, his future kingdom. But not everybody appreciates it. And, you know, for instance, King Saul doesn't appreciate what David's doing, and he's trying everything he can think of to get rid of him. This lesson really doesn't concern him. This chapter isn't about him so much. In 1 Samuel 25, we have basically three characters that we learn about that play a major role. David, whom we already know. David here is young. He's brave. He's brash. He is adventuresome. He is devoted to the Lord. His loyalty always seems to be with the Lord. And yet, sometimes, he is a violent man. And this is going to raise its head in this chapter. You know, David's very passionate about things, and he feels things deeply. And sometimes that serves he and the purpose of God well. Sometimes that's a positive, and then sometimes it can be disastrous for David. We also meet a man named Nabal here in 1 Samuel 25. Nabal is a very wealthy man. He may well have been the richest man in that part of Israel other than the king. Very wealthy, has lots of property, lots of sheep, the things that made people wealthy in those days. But the way he's described here in 1 Samuel 25, basically, this is a mean, nasty guy. He is obnoxious. He's bad-tempered. He's a hard man. That's literally what the text says about him. Poorly behaved. He's rude. You get sort of the idea of what Nabal is like. As you read this chapter, it seems the thing that most concerns Nabal is keeping his stuff. Got a lot of stuff, and he wants to make sure he continues to have a lot of stuff. This guy is so obnoxious that people don't even want to talk to him. We see this several times throughout this chapter. People you think would go say something to Nabal don't, because they know what the reaction is going to be. Nabal is interested in his stuff. You remember the story Jesus tells about the rich fool? In the Gospel of Luke, this man who had all this stuff, and his number one concern seemed to be to keep his stuff and to build bigger barns and fill them with his stuff. Remember, God confronts that man and says, "You fool, this night your soul will be required of you, and then whose will these things be?" And Jesus says, "So is the person who is not rich toward God." I'm reminded of that story of Jesus when I read the story about Nabal here. This is the type of person we're talking about. His name, Nabal, means fool in the Hebrew language. And he's a fool. And then we meet in this chapter a beautiful and wise woman named Abigail. Abigail somehow is the wife of Nabal. And you think about this, what a mismatch. It's true Beauty and the Beast story, except in this case, the beast is really a beast all the time. And totally opposite from Abigail. Abigail comes across as this beautiful woman. She's beautiful both inside and out, as she's described. And the true opposite of her husband. Her husband is a fool, and she is so wise in her actions and in her words. Well, as the story goes, David and Nabal have a conflict that develops out in the wild west of Israel. And it really seems like it's headed for a battle. It's headed for war. And no doubt the result of that battle is going to be a great slaughter of not only Nabal, but all his men. Nobody messes with David and his mighty men without losing violently. And so that's what's going to end up happening here. And the conflict arises because Nabal acts like Nabal. No, he is rude, and he's foolish and dismissive of David. David had come asking, had sent people to him asking for food and water for his men. And they reminded Nabal, you know, "We've been treating you well and taking care of you. Could you provide a little sustenance for our people?" And Nabal refuses. He refuses to show the basic hospitality that was expected in that culture to help these men out who had been good to him. And when he's asked, he says things like, "Who's David? Who's the son of Jesse?" Just insulting words. And basically summing up what he says, "Why should I feed this ragtag bunch of wanderers? Why should I give them anything?" A really dumb response. Foolish. True to his name. Well, this all happens the first 15 or so verses of 1 Samuel 25. And that's bad enough, but then something more foolish begins to develop. After Nabal behaved this way, and then something worse is on the horizon. It's not from Nabal, it's from David, God's anointed, God's chosen one. See, David is not perfect. And you know, unlike Jesus, who is the ultimate Messiah and who is perfect in all he says and does, David has character flaws. And one of his flaws is his violent temper, which often he carries out. And sometimes the story is just told of that violence, and the writers don't pause and say, this wasn't right. But really evaluating the whole story of David, this violence was a problem. And it's on display here in this chapter, in this story. Listen to David's reaction after Nabal had insulted him, rejected hospitality and so forth. This is down in verse 13, 1 Samuel 25. And David said to his men, every man strap on his sword. And every man of them strapped on his sword, and David also strapped on his sword. And about 400 men went up after David. You see the rage, just the sort of instant violent reaction. And get a little bit more of that down in verses 21 and 22. Now David had said, surely in vain have I guarded all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him, and he has returned me evil for good. God do so to the enemies of David, and more also, if by morning I leave so much as one male of all who belong to him. Translating, I'm going to kill everybody in his group. You're not going to have one guy left. Well, David is on his way to wipe out a bunch of people. And many of them, we might say, innocent. Maybe we could say Nabal deserved it for his actions, but what about all these other men, several of whom, as you read through the story, they show their loyalty to David, to God's anointed. David's going to wipe them all out. And by this act of temper, he is going to incur blood guilt before he even gets to the throne of Israel. This is going to make things difficult for him. And it's sort of amazing because if you look closely at the context here, David, this is the same guy that in the previous chapter had spared the life of King Saul when he could have killed him. You remember the story where David spares Saul? And a lot of times we think about that story and think, what restraint. You know, what an admirable thing that he did. But you go one chapter further, and David is ready to slaughter a whole group of people for a little slight. Just a little offense in comparison. And he would have done it. He was on his way to do it. He certainly would have slaughtered all these people. He had set up the posse. They're raising dust on the trail on the way toward Nabal. The swords are sharpened and ready to go. They're breathing fire. But then comes Abigail on the scene. She's been tipped off by one of the servants, one of Nabal's men, about what's happened. This whole poor behavior by Nabal, and that David's on his way to kill them all. And so it says in verse 18, with great haste, she prepared a large amount of provisions of food and drink for David and his brigade, the things that Nabal had refused to do. Abigail, his wife, does, without telling her husband. See her wisdom? She doesn't speak to her husband about this. She just does it. I want us to just listen to what she says and watch what she does, beginning at verse 23 here. When Abigail saw David, she hurried and got down from the donkey and fell before David on her face and bowed to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, on me alone, my Lord, be the guilt. Please let your servant speak in your ears and hear the words of your servant. Let not my Lord regard this worthless fellow Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name and folly is with him. But I, your servant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now then, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, because the Lord has restrained you from blood guilt and from saving with your own hand, now then let your enemies and those who seek to do evil to my Lord be as Nabal. And now let this present that your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your servant, for the Lord will certainly make my Lord a sure house, because my Lord is fighting the battles of the Lord. And evil shall not be found in you so long as you live. If men rise up to pursue you and to seek your life, the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living in the care of the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the hollow of a sling. When the Lord has done to my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you and appointed you prince over Israel, my Lord shall have no cause of grief or pangs of conscience for having shed blood without cause, or for my Lord working salvation himself. When the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your servant. Speech of Abigail. A lot of words there. Maybe even a bit hard to follow because of all the different uses of the word Lord. But it's in fact one of the longest speeches of any woman in all the Bible recorded. And certainly among the wisest. You talk about the power to diffuse conflict with wisdom. To me, this would be one of a great example for what you're going to be teaching in how to make peace. Abigail, in this situation, makes peace in an incredible way, and she's as good an example as you'll find of this by what she says and does here. And couldn't we use such wisdom in our world today? You know, people these days seem to take pride in throwing gasoline on conflicts and making them worse rather than having the wisdom to diffuse situations. But we have this wise woman, Abigail, who knows how to behave and knows how to calm things down. It really is an amazing story about her. Now, David here, as bad as Nabal is, David's about to make a huge mistake before he becomes king. Just in a fit of anger, he's about to really mess some things up until beautiful Abigail steps in and she saves the day. David is so furious, he almost kills her. He says so. If you look down at verse 34 of the chapter, you know, that I almost, when I saw you come and killed you, he has just enough restraint to listen, to hear her out, and thus be stopped from making this mistake. There are a lot of things that could be said about what Abigail said, these wise words she spoke. Her great humility in what she does here. You notice how she approaches David. I mean, she bows before him. She is willing to take blame on herself, even though her husband was the fool who caused the situation. She says, on me alone, be the blame. He's the guilty party, but she's willing to, in order to defuse the situation, to take blame. Her generosity and her hospitality. Remember what the original offense was, refusal to just give some food and water, and she makes up for that out of her own. And she feeds and gives drink to these weary travelers. She's generous. She's hospitable. Her initiative. I mean, she steps out and does this on her own. and doesn't talk to her husband about it. She knew that, that's one of the examples that people didn't even want to speak to Nabal. They knew what the reaction would be. She didn't want to speak to him. But she steps out and does the right thing. That initiative is special. And her sensitivity to the Lord and to His will in this situation, she seems to understand what's going on and what needs to take place. The fact that she recognized God's anointed, David. She recognized him and treated him well rather than opposing him, like the others here had. And then, just think about her honesty about her husband. She says, his name is Fool because he's a fool. Yeah, I'm married to a fool. That's even refreshing in a day and age where people will defend family members simply because they're family members, even if they're in the wrong, even if their actions oppose God and oppose God's anointed, they'll stand up for and defend just because they share blood. Not Abigail. She has her priorities straight and her loyalty straight in life. Abigail seemed to know the plan God had for David. She fully supported God's purpose. She seems to be a true woman of faith in this sense. She recognizes David as a man of faith who is about to make a big mistake. He's about to really mess things up for himself with his violent, rash actions. She says to David, sort of summing up, leave it to God. Let God take care of this, David. God's going to protect you in all things. He's going to make you prince, king over Israel. Trust God, David. Trust God. Well, we all need wise people like Abigail in our lives, don't we? At times, don't we need people like this who will come alongside us, especially in stressful, difficult times, in high-pressure times, when we're about to jump off the cliff, we're about to make a big mistake, and somebody is there to remind us that we can trust God, that we can trust His purpose, that we should really act in faith instead of out of our passion, our anger, our upset, whatever it is. Well, you might remember how this story ends. A little over a week later, God strikes Nabal dead. When he hears what had almost happened from his wife, Abigail, he basically sounds like has a stroke, lingers for about a week, and dies. The text attributes that to God. God takes vengeance on this man and takes care of this foolish man. David moves on from here. He eventually takes Abigail as his wife. And the story of David then develops from there. But for tonight, what I don't want us to forget is this good woman and her great speech and what she accomplished, a speech that is inspired by faith in the one true God. What an example for us. We live in a world of increasing strife and conflict. Jesus wanted us to be salt and light in this world. That seems to me to be one of those places where we need to be salt and light. That is influence. If it's a world full of conflict and violence, we ought to be doing our part to quell that. and not throw gasoline on the fire? Will we be ones to add to it and increase it? Will we be fools or wise? Will we learn how to diffuse conflict and point people to God? Will we leave vengeance to God? You remember Romans 12:19. Don't take vengeance yourself. Leave it to me. And to me, here's an even more important question. Will we ever be found setting ourselves against the Lord's anointed? Saul was set against God's anointed. Nabal was set against God's anointed. In the first century, many set themselves against God's Messiah, set themselves against the Lord. And we can be found in the same sorry situation today, you know, where we find ourselves in opposition to the purposes of God, opposed even to Jesus. That's possible for us. It takes some wisdom to get out of such a mess. And it takes humility. It takes some sensitivity to God's purpose. So may we learn tonight from this beautiful and wise woman of God, Abigail. And learn those principles she teaches us about how to conduct ourselves with others. Thank you for following this with me for a few minutes tonight. We're going to sing an invitation song. Charlie will lead us just in a moment. Tonight, if you have a reason to come before the body and come before God, asking for forgiveness perhaps, or maybe somebody tonight is ready to submit themselves to the Messiah, to be baptized into Christ. We would love to help you with that. We'd love to pray for you about any situation going on. If you would care to have the prayers of the saints who are here tonight. So if we can serve you, help you in some way, we give you this time to respond while we stand, while we sing.